I am really fortunate to work with a wonderful research team at Temple. Brian Daly is actually a child psychologist. He was working in public health with us at Temple and recently moved on to Drexel, and he's teaching there now. Dawn Eichen and I are both obesity researchers. She's also interested in physical activity. And Cindy worked with us in Pennsylvania before recently relocating here to Colorado and is now continuing her work out here. We're also indebted to the students and parents, teachers, and administrators of the School District of Philadelphia. That is where our data was collected from, and we'll get into that. But we certainly are grateful for their participation. Okay, nothing to disclose. Okay, so a little bit of background, not too much. Certainly, obesity is a very systemic problem, and we've all heard a lot about that in many of the presentations, and certainly they've done that better than I in terms of laying out the various health impacts, and potential financial impacts to the country, and so I'll kind of leave that to the existing presentations. But as it relates specifically to school environments, obesity presents a really complex challenge for the schools themselves. We see often that obesity is linked to peer-to-peer victimization, to bullying, other sorts of violence within a school setting. It's associated with poor academic outcomes, attention challenges, along with the obvious health challenges for the students. So school districts' policies and ongoing initiatives have been undertaken across the country to really start to try to tackle the obesity challenge that they're facing. In Pennsylvania, height and weight are routinely screened, and that does go on across the country. I think if you think back to your school experience, there were screenings for height and weight, vision, hearing, lice, sometimes scoliosis, among a host of other things. So the data exists. In most of the country, that data is used for surveillance purposes. So if BMIs are calculated, it's reported to state and federal agencies, health departments, and the like, and is not identified back to individual students. It's just kind of presented in aggregate, and it's used for tracking trends over time. In Pennsylvania, along with just a few other states at this point, it's actually used as a screening program. It sounds like perhaps in West Virginia as well, that might be going on, but other states have dabbled in it and then backed off of it, and there might be some reasons we can talk about pros and cons of that. But that's what is going on in terms of the screening program itself. So our program is called the Pennsylvania Growth Screening Program. Basically, obviously, the heights and weights are calculated or measured in school. And then associated with that, the parents get a letter at home. So the caregivers are notified in writing of the student's BMI weight classification. And is recommended then if you're in and it, overweight or obese, if you're underweight, or even if your weight classification has changed significantly, even within normal, because there's a wide range of normal. So if a student was at like the 60th and all of a sudden they dropped to the 30th in 1 year, they would also be flagged as a potential red flag and be recommended to follow up with their primary care physician. Okay, so what we have all this stuff going on. Unfortunately, less is known about how students feel about their own weight, how they would classify themselves, and then what they may or may not be doing about that. And specifically with our Pennsylvania Growth Screening Program, there's been very little looked at in terms of the impact of those letters going home, how they're received, what the response is. There's little bits of data, and it's kind of mixed, to be honest. It's kind of all over the place. And so in this study, we at Temple, actually, my research team runs our Pennsylvania Youth Risk Behavior Survey. We run the Philadelphia version. And so we have the opportunity to look at a broad set of data about these students. So we were looking at their self-reported height and weight loss efforts among this diverse group of adolescents. And we were really looking at the difference between those who accurately and inaccurately assess their weight status and then what behaviors they may or may not be engaging based on that, and trying to look at linkages between those. Okay. So our study was a fairly large survey-based study of just over 1,300 students. The students ranged across all grades of high school. It was roughly split evenly in terms of gender, and it does represent a mixed group with respect to racial and ethnic background. The students themselves came from 47 different public high schools across Philadelphia. Our school response rate from the identified school was 100%. So we didn't have any schools say, no, you can't do this here. And then the students within the identified classes, we had a 77% response rate from students. So that incorporates students who were absent, students who refused, some English language learners who we just didn't really give it to because they couldn't quite get it in the time that we had. So overall, we had a very high response rate, and that response rate enabled the data to be generalized and weighted such that it's representative of all students, public high school students across Philadelphia. So the measures we utilized, we used the 2009 Philadelphia Youth Risk Behavior Survey. I think many of us in this room would be familiar with the YRBS. It is, of course, a national data set, a national project through the CDC. Philadelphia, along with several other major cities, conducts their own citywide data as well. And so this data is just our city data. It's not the national data, for the most part. The questions that were involved in the broader survey, some were the standard CDC questions, and some were questions that our research team had added additionally to look at. So specifically, we were looking at BMI. For the sake of this study, it was based on their self-reported height and weight, as well as their age and gender, so to generate the age and gender-specific BMI percentiles that are used in youth. Perceived weight status, that was looking at a question of how they describe themselves, whether they describe themselves as slightly underweight, very underweight, a little underweight, about the right weight, a little overweight, or very overweight. And then we looked at a variety of behaviors that were associated with that. And for this particular presentation, we're only looking at weight loss-related behaviors. So we were looking at dietary practices and physical activity practices specifically. So the weight perception, ultimately, we ended up dichotomizing into yes, no, whether they were accurate or inaccurate, and then the various other behaviors, whether yes, no, whether or not they did them, just for the sake of simplicity and kind of motoring through all of this. So a little bit of data early in the morning. If we start just looking at the yellow was their BMI. And so we see that about 60% of the students in our sample were normal weight. About another approximately 40% were either overweight or obese. And almost no one was underweight. And just for those of you not in Pennsylvania, we did look comparing our data to the national data set from the same year. And our students were slightly more overweight. It is statistically significant, but it's a difference. Our mean weight of our sample versus the mean weight of the national sample, it's a difference of 2 pounds. Now, because it's such a large sample, that turns out to be statistically significant, but quite honestly, 2 pounds is whether or not they ate breakfast. You know, it's how much of their water bottle they've drank. So it's probably fairly similar to other urban environments across the country. So wherever you might be doing your work, you might be able to see some parallels for yourself. Okay, so that's their BMI, their perceived weight, based on the question of how they describe themselves, is in red. And so what we actually see, if you kind of look, the perceived weight is shifted down. They tended more to see themselves as overweight or normal weight or even underweight. We had a much larger group on that underweight. So students were fairly similar in the middle. The bars are kind of close together in the middle of that distribution around normal weight, but the students in the tails were much more disparate in the way that they perceive themselves versus the way their BMI would have suggested that they would in fact be. Yes, okay. So kind of just breaking this down to make it a little bit easier. We're just looking, same data again, but we're just looking at just the normal weight students as they compare to the obese students, just looking at that those two groups in particular. And you can see that among the normal weight students, the large majority of them would accurately describe themselves as normal weight. If we look just among the obese students, only about 20% of them accurately knew that they were obese, would describe themselves as, you know, in the initial question would have described themselves as very overweight. That would have been the terminology they would have selected. Among those who were inaccurate, about 50% of them said they were overweight, so they would have been off by like one category down, and then the remaining over 20% misclassified themselves by two or more weight categories. So they were obese, but would have either said that they were normal weight or even underweight. Okay, so moving on, and I did kind of forget to say even on this one. I apologize. I haven't had my coffee yet. These disparities, I have to say, were a little bit surprising to me even just starting, because these, based on our school-based screening program, the Pennsylvania Growth Screening Program, the students engaged in the survey would have been receiving these letters for a minimum of 3 years. Now, it's been graded in its implementation, so some of the younger students would have had more letters than some of our older students, just the way it's been phased in. But they would have received some notification. There would have been several teachable moments, perhaps, along the way that you would have thought would have maybe gotten them a little closer in terms of their perception. Okay, so if we look with respect to their intention to lose weight, so you say, what are you trying to do about your weight? Are you trying to lose weight, gain weight, stay the same, nothing, things like that? Ideally, if we're looking at just, this is just the obese students, if we're looking at the obese students, ideally, they're doing something about their weight. Ideally, they're trying to lose weight or they're, moving that direction. We don't want them to say they're doing nothing, because unfortunately that would be quite unhealthy for them. And so if we look among almost all of the groups, those who accurately perceived their weight were more likely to report trying to lose weight. So there was an intention there. And that held for almost all of the groups. It did not among the Caucasian students, among the white students. But it held among almost all the groups in a pretty strong fashion in most cases. So there's intention. Hold that in mind as we get to the specific weight loss related behaviors. So adequate activity, that was looking at how often they were reporting moderate to vigorous physical activity, how many days a week, and that's based on the 2008, I believe, guidelines for physical activity. Whether or not they reported exercising to lose weight, just in general, we didn't ask any specifics on that question. So it's, are you exercising to lose weight? Yes or no. Eating less to lose weight, again, yes or no. Physical inactivity. So again, the question that was asking how often they did any activity, we categorized the ones inadequately active who were 5 or more days a week of 60 minutes or more based on the guidelines. We also looked at who was completely inactive, who was reporting no days of physical activity, and they were the ones who came up in physical inactivity. And finally, those who were reporting unhealthy weight loss methods. So that was dietary practices such as fasting, skipping meals, using dietary supplements, vomiting, and the like. And so what we see is that unfortunately, although the students who accurately described themselves as obese, who knew that their weight was a concern, they say they want to lose weight. The intention is there. But if we look at the actual behaviors involved, we see, in fact, that they are not, the intention is not followed by practice. So they're not exercising more. In fact, they're exercising less. They're not eating. They are not eating less. And in fact, they're using unhealthy weight loss practices more frequently. So it is a bit of a challenge in terms of linking their perception, their intention, to the actual behaviors. And so that brings me to kind of our final point here, which is implications for the school health screening program. We've done a lot of work with this. This is just kind of a snapshot. But the way the program is laid out in its current format, heights and weights, letters, and that is what is required. And on the one hand, it seems very promising, because if you have those heights and weights and they're just sitting in the nurse's drawer, like, why not tell them? To a certain extent. I mean, it's a teachable moment. It might stimulate, if you look, stages of change or something, it might kind of get them moving along. It could be something that could motivate some positive behavior change. And we do know that the longer a person is overweight or obese in their life, the longer they sustain that, the greater chance they have of staying obese as an adult and encountering a variety of comorbid conditions. So certainly it would be ideal to get some change started a little bit sooner. But unfortunately, those who know that they're obese and who are aware of it are engaged in a lot of unhealthy practices. And so it seems that there's a definite need in the school health community for additional nutrition counseling. We didn't talk about the mental health outcomes, but mental health services, child psychologists, guidance counselors of the sort, looking with them as well. We've heard a lot about school food, school physical activity. There's a lot of different ways to go. And so I think as practitioners, as researchers, I'm encouraged by the fact that students who at least know they're overweight, who know they're obese, really want to do something about that, who would say that they're trying. I think that's encouraging. I think we have to do a lot more in helping them figure out how to do that healthfully and safely. And then for the remaining students who are not who are not reporting themselves as obese and who are not necessarily motivated or taking those appropriate follow-up steps, helping them find their way to that correct body image, but in a way that is protective and doesn't stimulate a real rash response that could be dangerous long term. Okay, so my email is there. I think we'll have some time for questions at the end, but if anyone has any questions, you're certainly welcome to contact me and we can talk a little bit more about this in the future. Thank you guys for listening.